Hi, I'm Tony Clayton Lee, and you're welcome to the IMRO podcast. Since the release in 2016 of her debut EP, Wild, Cork singer and songwriter Lyra has embedded herself in the Irish music landscape, as well as making serious waves internationally. With new music on the way in 2023, Lyra's path to commercial success continues. In a wide-ranging conversation, Lyra talks to me about her County Cork background, her early days on the lower rungs of the ladder to success, touring with Westlife, and being empowered by fashion and clothes. This is Lyra on the IMRO podcast. So look, Lyra, you're welcome to the IMRO podcast. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule. You've just come from a kind of photo shoot.
I have, full slap on.
Yeah, so kind of
look
busy,
like a different
busy.
Woman.
You grew up in Bandon, County Cork, which I think in fairness isn't known for being the centre of any universe, let alone its own. So at what point did you think, if I'm going to have to make a go of working, living in the music business, I'm going to have to get out of here? So when did that thought pop into your head?
It was kind of, I suppose, after school, like everyone else. I was like, right, I better start doing something with my life. And if it's to be music, then I better go further afield and try it out there. I didn't initially at the start. I like used to do a lot of writing just at home by myself, or like with my sister or something like that. That's kind of the way it was. And then I was like, right, if I really want to take this seriously, I have to make the leap. And I wasn't going to go too far. I feel like I wasn't going to go to LA or New York. I mean, I'm a family woman at the end of the day.
Right, okay.
So across the water was the best option for me.
And was it always going to be music? I mean, you've said there that if you wanted to make a living, then you would have to do this or that. But was there no other option for you, did you think? Was it always music?
No, there wasn't really, because, like, I'm going to call a spade, it wasn't fantastic at anything else in school, to be quite honest with you. It was music or science, and I still couldn't imagine myself being a scientist. I definitely preferred dressing up than putting on a white coat. So I decided this was going to be the road for me, and it was always in music class that I was excelling the most. So, and it was the thing I enjoyed the most, so it never really felt like I was in school. So it was definitely something that I was like, you know what, I'm going to go for it. And I suppose once I started discovering that I can write my own music, it was a massive turning point for me, where I was like, right, it's not just about getting up there and singing other people's songs or singing covers. I can actually sit down and put pen to paper and write melodies and write my story of my life. And I just continue to do that.
When did that start? You know, the kind of writing your songs as opposed to covering other people's?
It was, so when I was growing up, my nan used to be like so worried about me wanting to pursue a career in the music industry, because I am from a family of a lot of singers, but great singers. And that's kind of like where it was, like at family occasions or like down the pub or something like that. So for her thinking that I wanted to do this as a full-time thing, she was always very nervous for me and always thought, oh, she'll be broke for the rest of her life and she'll be scrimping and scraping. I mean, she wasn't wrong in that, but I mean, I still give it a go. So I then, to kind of show her that I wasn't just going down the road singing Caledonia my entire life, that I write songs, I wrote a song for her, and that was Emerald. And that was okay. The first song that I really stuck my teeth into and I wrote, and the one that got me noticed, and it was her song.
Right. What were your early loves in music? You mentioned that you were singing in school. Mm-hmm. Clearly you're a fan of pop music. What did you love listening to when you were a kid and getting into your teens?
I suppose I'm like my sister's shadow, so whatever she loved, I just loved automatically. That's what happened in my life. So like, she was very much into like Fleetwood Mac, she was into Michael Jackson, so I was with them. My mom loved the Carpenters, so my early ages were listening to the Carpenters, the Staves, stuff like that. And then when I had a little bit of pocket money and used to go to car boot sales and buy some CDs, it'd be the likes of, I'd pick up like the Spice Girls CD and stuff like that, and Aqua. Don't know why, but I did. So like, then I started listening to things like that. And then I suppose once I started maturing more, like now I'm really into like the Sia and the London Grammar. I suppose it's more of a mature sound because I have matured. from
yeah.
Aqua.
Yeah, sure. Well, you'd like Thank to God. Think so, wouldn't you? Yeah, sure. Okay.
So now I've kind of like grown into that. So it's like it's been like from old school to like real pop to now I feel music with a substance.
Okay, okay. And was that kind of in the back of your head from the get-go? You know, music with substance.
Yeah, well, like when I write songs, I like them to have that quality in them because I'm writing about my life and it's always about something that's happened to me. So it's always very personable. So I always wanted to have that kind of storytelling vibe to it and like a kind of a raw nature of almost just like telling people about my life story through music. And I suppose that's where I really loved the likes of London Grammar and Adele, you know, and like Ed Sheeran. If you were just to read the lyrics, you'd know what they were saying.
Yeah.
And I loved that storytelling right. vibe. Okay. So that's how I got into it.
Yeah, there is something very distinctive about that. What do you think distinguishes your songwriting from other people's similarly confessional songwriting?
Pretty sure Ed Sheeran's not writing about my love life. So I think I'll get away with saying that that's unique enough as it is.
And presumably you're not writing about his.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I suppose it's that. And I suppose I still don't pronounce my THs and my diction is shocking. So that'll always distinguish me on the radio. They'll be like, there's your one that can't pronounce her THs. So you know what? I'm rolling with it. I'm from Cork. I don't care.
Right, okay. You said that when you first started writing your own songs, getting you into them, did you think that you had truly found your creative artistic voice by doing so?
I suppose at the start... I didn't because it was new and I was exploring and I was trying to take influences off a lot of different artists and put them into me. And it was great for learning. Like my first EP that I self-released and done myself, Wild, was a great learning curve for me. Like I thought that I wanted to be the next Enya,
right.
Kate Bush. I thought that's the road I wanted to go down. So I... You know, my soundscapes were very like that. They were layered in harmonies. Like the melodic structure of them wasn't your standard structure. And I thought this is what I wanted to be. And I suppose once I kind of started writing for a longer period and then wrote Falling, that's when I really felt like, okay, this is how I write songs. This feels natural to me. It comes a lot quicker because I'm not trying to be too artistic. I'm just trying to tell a story through my voice and my vocals. And it was great because it was something that I still love to do, but it wasn't taking me 2 weeks to write a song because I was trying to overthink it and make it this Mozart piece that changes 25 times and has so many harmonies on it. It was just, this is me.
A pop song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the start of my career, somebody said, are you like a pop artist? I'd be like, no, I'm not. I don't know why this like pop label was like so offensive to me when it's really not. It's just, you know, I suppose when I was coming up, people always wanted that kind of more ethereal kind of vibe. And like you wanted to be mysterious and you didn't want to be a pop artist. You were too cool for that. And now I'm like, would you give yourself a bloody break? It's like the biggest genre in the world. You're a pop artist. And I'm like, you know, yeah, I am.
It goes without saying that some of the best songs out there are pop songs.
Exactly.
You know, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes tops. It's perfect. You know, it's absolutely perfect. So you released Wild in your debut EP in 2016, I think.
Yeah.
When did record labels start sniffing? Or when did you go about looking for record labels? Or did they come to you?
So it was very early on. It was... when I just had Emerald and a few other crap songs that I never released in my entire life. And so that's when I was approached by a lot of labels in the UK to come over and take meetings, and I had no team around me whatsoever. So I went by myself and I sat in there in the big studios and took the meetings and faked it till I made it, basically.
Right.
But it was kind of going in a direction where I wasn't happy to be, I suppose. And I just decided that I was going to take some time to myself. In this time as well, my nan did get ill, so I wanted to come back home and look after her. And then I took that time to be like, let's create who I am. who I really and really truly am. And then it was after that that Polydor Records got in contact and were like, we love what you do, come in for a meeting. So I went in, met Ben Mortimer. We had a great old chat.
And Ben Mortimer is head of Polydor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we bought out the next round of songs, which was Falling, Mother, Never Let Go. So it was like the next chapter.
Okay, okay. Just go back to when you were doing those very early meetings with, you know, in the kind of big studios and the big A&O guys and whatever. What were, looking back, you know, in the, from the distance of 7 years, effectively, what were they like? Did you feel confident to be in the room? Did you feel out of your depth? Did you feel, as you said, did you fake it till you made it?
Yeah, I did fake it till I make it, because I, like, looking back now, I'm like, what in the name of God were you doing going in there with no one representing it on your part? Like, what were you thinking? But at that time, I was like, okay, well, you've got the email. You're not going to say no. Like, you have to go. So it's either you go and put on this face that, like, you feel like you deserve to be here and that, yeah, my songs are good enough to sit here and play you. Or you go and crumble, and then they see you as that kind of artist. So regardless whether we're moving forward or not, I wanted them to leave the room and be like, maybe she's not for us, but she's a strong woman and she knows what she wants. And that's how I went into it.
Okay. And as you intimated there a few minutes ago, they wanted to give you to the public in a certain way. They wanted you to go a particular direction. Mm-hmm. You didn't like what their suggestions were. Yeah. What directions did they suggest that they wanted you to go?
So a lot of it for me was that my voice, the pronouncing the THs was always a problem when I went into the studio, or my diction, or that sometimes when I sing, I don't like finish my words. So I'd have to stay late and do all the so they could like add them on. And I started to become very insecure about my vocals. And like, I have a very loud voice, like a singing voice, I do. And it was being toned down a lot. So I just thought, if I'm being changed, then am I really good enough? So insecurity started creeping in a lot. And I almost started singing like somebody who I wasn't. And I just was extremely unhappy about that. And every song that I was writing at that point was sounding like almost somebody else was singing them, because I wasn't truly me. So it's hard to stick in a lane that you don't belong in. So I just felt like I was forging it. And I was just like, I just can't keep doing this, because I'll be miserable and probably regret it. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to have to step back and find a team or producers or and stuff like that that don't mind the old duh instead of tuh, or don't mind that my diction is a bit all over the place. And like, I'm not saying, like, when I go into the studio and people say, oh, you know, I can't really understand what you're saying in that word. And if I listen to it back and I'm like, you know what, actually, I don't even know what I'm saying in that word. You're right. Let's phonetically try and fix it. Like, I know that there is a certain line. I can't be going on records mumbling. But it's just finding people who didn't make you feel insecure that was your natural way of singing.
Which is odd, really, because, I mean, you're at that point, you were kind of surrounded and guided, supposedly, by people who apparently knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
But they only knew what they were doing in relation to what they wanted you to do, not what you wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? To be quite honest, you know, maybe if I didn't feel like that and I kept going down that road, maybe I would have got there a lot faster. Maybe I would have had more of a success now if I went down that road with them than I do at this present moment. Maybe that is the case, because as you said, a lot of them do know how to make artists, break artists. That's their job. They're not sitting up there head of labels for no reason. So I could have put all my trust and faith in them. I really could have done that. And that could have been an avenue for me. But for me, I just couldn't do it to myself.
Okay. So a couple of tracks on that EP, Wild, Emerald and Falling, as you mentioned, they appeared on, like, they were synchronised to TV shows.
Yeah.
I think Love Island and Grey's Anatomy in particular. What did that do for you as an artist? Did it enable you to do bigger and better things, even slightly? Or did it give you a little bit of confidence that, whoa, my song's been used on these massive TV shows? What was that like for you?
It definitely gave me confidence anyway, because, like, you know, Love Island and especially Grey's Anatomy, they can pick any songs that they want. So to be one that was selected was like, oh, they've obviously listened to this and thought, oh, this is good enough to go on our show, which was amazing to hear. And especially because obviously being an Irish artist being played on Love Island, which is huge in the UK, was really cool for me to almost like break a bit over there. And like people listen to my song and then people obviously would Shazam it and all that. Like a lot of times after I sang the likes of Falling, I think Falling has been used so many times on Love Island.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I think in total I've been played like around 12 times on Love Island, okay, all different songs, which is really cool.
Right. But getting back to even just being heard on those programs, as you said, it kind of gave you more confidence. Did it enable you in any other way?
I actually got invited to a sync writing camp in Nashville. So that was pretty cool. Okay. So it was like 2 weeks in Nashville. Win-win. Oh my God, I loved the place. My first time ever going there and I loved it. All writing for movies and TVs and games and everything. And maybe, well, not maybe, it's definitely if my music naturally hadn't been picked up in sync, that I probably wouldn't have been invited to that camp where I made some amazing contacts, some amazing friends. I actually met an artist called Bia, who is now massive in the UK, and we were like just hanging out. And then after that camp, she just exploded in America and we still stay in touch. So it's like, it was a great opportunity, which I wouldn't have got. And as I said, it's just because I naturally was writing these songs that were like led into sync. I didn't sit down and write Wild with sync in mind at all. I just love the atmospheric cinematic sounds.
Right. Okay. Okay. And the learning curves then that you have experienced over the last 6 years, seven mm-hmm. years since Wild was released, how familiar are you now with the way the industry works? I mean, we've listened to you saying that you barefaced, unashamedly went into a kind of big studio, yeah, big room with people who think they know what they're doing and probably do in certain respects, and that you kind of faked it. But now I presume you have a lot more experience with the way the industry works.
I do. Like, I don't know if I'll ever fully know how it works because it's forever changing its tune, literally. Like, 1 minute you have to be an artist where you sit down, you write songs, you make demos, you give them to them and they're played on radio and you sell out shows and that's it. Now you have to sit at home, you have to write songs, you have to make a dance to it and do it on TikTok. Then you have to make a viral video with the song behind it, embedded on it and put it on TikTok. Then you have to do a live concert for free on Instagram. And so I kind of don't really know where I am, to be quite honest, or where I stand with the music industry right now. I just keep going.
Sure, sure. What has changed, obviously, and it seems to continually change on a kind of week-by-week basis almost, is the way that artists are using social media and streaming platforms, various, mm-hmm. various other bits and pieces. I mean, I'm sure, you know, in 2 years' time, TikTok might be as old-fashioned as MySpace. I don't know, probably. So how are you with that? I mean, would you just prefer to write songs and sing them in front of people and record them and get them out there? Or do you find that you're okay with the likes of Instagram, TikTok?
I'm definitely a bit more of an old fart when it comes to music. Like, you know, I watched an interview with Adele and she was like, Everyone's making music. Actually, I won't do her voice. I can't do it. I can't do the English accent.
That was pretty good, though.
I mean, did you think that was good?
Carry on. Yeah, go on.
No,
carry
on. No, I'm mortified.
No, you shouldn't be, really. I'll put my hand across my throat if it's really bad.
If you're like, and stop.
No, okay.
But the way she was saying, everyone's writing music for TikTok nowadays. Who's writing music for the generation I started writing music for? Like, who's writing for them? She's like, I will. You know, and that's the generation that she was, and that's the generation that she wants to be in, and she does feel like it's a dying breed. And I agree with her, and that's very sad because I love that real sense of artists singing, and then you go to see them on stage and it's like, it's a magical. I feel like maybe a small bit of the magic is kind of disappearing because you see what everyone's having for breakfast, dinner, tea. What they look like in the morning, the evening, the night, hungover, drunk, everything. Like, there's no sense of this. It's not so much a boundary because I love people getting to know me as a person, but it's like this sense of, I don't know, stardom.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no mystique for a start,
yeah.
You know, which is the bedrock of being, I think, a kind of proper star in any area, be it movies or music or whatever area of pop culture. So there's no mystique. And I think if you, and you know, the corollary of that is that if there's no mystique, then everybody knows everything about you and they get bored very quickly. So you have to kind of up the game each time you post on Instagram or TikTok. And I kind of wonder, you know, where it stops.
Yeah, me too. And I hope it stops next okay. week.
Right.
If anyone is good at TikTok and wants to give me some advice, please do, because I am shocking. It like takes me about 50 drafts of like a 30-second video. And then I don't end up posting it because I'm like, well, that's a load of crap. I'm not putting it up. And I've like, I've just wasted 2 hours of my life. And I'm like, Lyra, you need to stop doing that. Just put something up. And also, I suppose when people come to see me live, I really like that they do get to know me because like, you know, you can look on my Instagram and most of it is when I'm in a photo shoot and I'm done up to the bloody nines and I'm posing this way, that way and the other. And you could be like, who does Joanne think she is? But when you come to the show and I'm explaining what my songs are about and just talking like I'm talking to you here today, I like them to know that side of it.
Yeah.
So I could really use the social media platforms in my benefit so people do get to know me. I'm just absolutely rubbish at it. I really am.
Yeah. Well, some artists are, and that's why, you know, I presume those artists that are, they have a team around them to guide them and, you know, direct them in a particular way. Now, what was your life before you released Wild? I read somewhere that you sold baby food.
Oh,
is that right?
I used to do promo work for anything.
Okay, so promo work is like selling stuff in supermarkets or?
It's literally like, you know, the people when you come into like Tesco's and they're like, would you like to try this new Richmond sausage?
Right, well, they used to do that. I mean, my local Tesco, there's none of that.
I was them. I was that. And like, yeah, a few times in Gatwick and Heathrow spraying people with perfume that probably were like, can she get out of my face at 6 o'clock in the morning? But I was like, if I sell 5 bottles, I can get out of here. Come on. I need to put out my EP. Oh.
Now, you have, you know, from Wild was released, you've released on a fairly regular basis, kind of either an EP or a track here, a track there, but there's no album yet. So I'm kind of wondering how, in the general scheme of things, do you view the entity of an album? Some artists put great importance on it. They think it's a real statement of intent and of their artistic vision. Other artists tend not to look at it that way. How do you view it?
I think albums are fantastic and I would love to have my own album out, which I will have my own album out. Like, the whole thing is written. And it's something that I, as an artist, am really pushing to get out because I do feel like that old traditional way. I love buying albums of artists that I love. I love getting a body of work. I love hearing their story the way they want to tell it and the chapters that they want to say it. I love that Adele pushed for her album to come out in a particular order because it was telling a story and I found that mind-blowing and just so beautiful. And it's something as an artist that really makes me fired up inside because it's your work and it's like writing a book and letting people read it, but just in an sonic form.
Yeah.
And it's something I am going to get out. I do want to put out a few singles first. And I do feel like sometimes that we can be right now in a world where things get digested very fast. So I do sometimes feel like if, say, I was to release an album in a month, that would get swallowed up in like 2 weeks and people are like, so what's next? And I suppose us as musicians know how long it takes to get an album prepared. Like it can take 2-3 years. So I would like to get more singles out first to kind of like show people this new chapter of me, because I do feel like, you know, I went from Wild, atmospheric, ooh, who am I? Ooh, am I Enya? To Falling, let's write about my ex-boyfriend all the time and get on Love Island. To these next songs where, ooh, I'm a single woman and I've got my first trip to Nashville and LA. Like, these are chapters that I'm going through in my musical career. So if I hit people with the album now, they'd be like, what in the name of God has happened, Lyra? So I want to put out some singles and be like, welcome. Welcome to the next stage of my life.
Okay.
And then the album will explain why it's there.
Okay. So I'm presuming from what you've just said that in the back of your mind, or maybe even toward the front of it, that there is some kind of a concept going on whenever the first album is put together. Is that fair enough to say?
The album will tell a lot about my life.
Okay.
I say that as if I'm 59,000 years old. It's just what I'm going through.
It's exactly like the way that Adele has, you know, 19, 25, I think, was the second, and 31 was the next. She's documenting the growth of her adulthood. And why not? I think it's a very, very good thing to do. But do you kind of think that's pretty much along the lines of what you would like for the album to have?
Yes, that's exactly what I would like the album to have. Like, every song in it has its purpose to be on it. I know it's kind of hard to explain, but like if I was to go through my emails of all the songs for the album, they'd all come up if I put them in like sort by date. They would all come up in a very nice order of how the past 3 years of my life has went.
Okay, very kind of diary-like.
Yes, I love that. And it's great because you write a ballad when you break up and you're so heartbroken, and then you write a really bloody angry song because you're gone through the grieving phase and you're bloody pissed off that he dumped you. Then you go to LA and you party hard. So it's a real emotional roller coaster. People are going like, I don't know whether to cry or to dance or to hit somebody. I don't know what to do in this, or have a divorce or have a marriage. Like, it's going to be, but I love that.
Yeah.
And like, I used as an artist at the very start, be like you can hear in Wild, there is a massive theme going through it. And that is ethereal and cinematic. And that's going through Wild. And I thought, well, if I'm being a true artist to myself, then this is who I am and I need to stay on this road, and that's it. And I've kind of found with going through life, it's like saying you need to go through life with one emotion. If you're like, well, you know what? In this world, I'm going to be known as a grumpy human being. So I'm going to be grumpy my entire life. Even if I'm happy, I'm going to be grumpy. That's the way I felt like it was going to be. So these songs are like, you know what? When I'm angry, it's an angry song. When I'm sad, it's a sad song. When I'm happy, it's a party song. When I want to dance, it's a dance song. And I'm now very happy with that, rather than being like, oh, you need to stick in your box and you need to stick with whatever artistic direction you feel like you are going to be, then you need to be it. I'm like, sod that. There is no rules in songwriting. Because if there was, I would have been kicked out of the club long ago. And it's so much fun. So enjoy it.
Okay. Speaking of what I can only presume was fun, you supported Westlife on their UK arena tour last year. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to talk about Westlife as such, because this is about you. What was being on those huge stages like for you?
Eye-opener. It was such an eye-opener and really motivational. Like, I would bloody love to do what they do. I would love it. Like, I didn't realize, I know this might sound so naive of me because I am in the music industry, but how many crew members you need to put on a show like that. Wow. They build the stage every single night. And it's not just Westlife. It's not just about Westlife. The tour is a work of art. And I loved seeing it being created every night. I just loved it. And it just made me feel like, oh, what would I do if I was here? And like all the lighting and the smoke and the videos in the back and the popping up from the stage and going down and poor Nikki falling down the stage. But like that happens. It just really inspired me to be like, come on, Lyra, keep working. You'll get there. Like just keep going. And can you imagine how much fun that would be at the end of it? Go through this hard work and by God, you can party on that stage. And getting to play on the stage before them. Everyone was like, were you nervous? Because obviously it was just me and two guys. Like, and I didn't have any lighting. I didn't have any videos behind me or anything. That was just me. But I relished in it. And like, I was so out of breath. It's a big, big stage for one girl on her own. But I loved it. And I want to be there by myself with my name up there.
Sure.
And their fans are amazing.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, were they receptive to you?
Yes, massively. Like, I was scared of that myself. Like, I've go to gigs with my friends. I'm like, oh, we'll get there now at about 7, you know, support acts on, and then we can have a drink, and then the main acts on. And they're like, they're not on till 9. We'll go down to the pub, and then we'll go up at 9. I'm like, we're going to see the support act. You don't understand what it means to us. So people were coming in early, which was lovely to see. It wasn't just singing to empty seats. And I thought them being Westlife fans that maybe that my genre wouldn't suit them, or me being a girl before Westlife, because I know they've had a few guys support them, that maybe that would be a thing. But to be quite honest with you, I came out and after the first time I spoke, the applause and the love you could feel was crazy. And it was so nice. And you know what really stood out for me on this tour is social media wasn't harassing me, or they weren't badgering me, or they weren't, who does you want think she is, or it was all positive and love. And it was like, it was a crowd of people that were that kind of were, if you've nothing nice to say, just don't say anything. But the people who wanted to show support, they really did. My DMs would be full of messages from like all audience members from every walk of life, like girls who had went for the first time with their mom and really loved how I spoke about body image, or, you know, women who bought their younger daughters because they'd seen me the night before and wanted their daughters to see me on stage because I'm not your average looking pop star girl and I talk about cellulite and stretch marks, and they wanted that to be an open conversation with their daughters.
Okay. Yeah, good.
And even one woman messaged me saying she bought her mom, who is dementia, who's from Ireland. And she said, the second you started talking, she started remembering Ireland and telling her stories about her when she was younger that the daughter never knew. And like this massive, massive message. And it was just full of love, that tour. And I'm so grateful I got to do it. It kind of refreshed my soul on not everything online is negative.
Yeah,
there is some beautiful humans out there.
How many dates did you, was it around 10
about
or 12?
24.
24, wow.
I thought it was Beyonce by the end of it. I loved it.
And these were like 15,000 seaters, weren't they? I think.
Huge.
Yeah, huge.
They were like up to 20,000 people.
Did you know
night.
What city you were in or what town you were in as the tour went on?
At the start, I was a bit disorientated by the whole thing. So the start of it went like, it was like nearly a show every night. But then towards the end, you'd get maybe like a night off. So I kind of started remembering where I was. It was around the Sheffield area. I got a bit confused. I was like, where are we now? But obviously then you go into the O2 in London and you're like, I know exactly where
right,
I am.
Right. And when you came out, did you go, hello Sheffield or hello Brighton or?
No. I'd be cringed to death.
That would be a bit cringe. I'm just saying. I did in
Brighton because obviously I live down there now. So I was like, oh yeah. And like, obviously I invited my friends because some of them hadn't ever seen me sing before. So they were like, oh, this is what you do. I think they think I just sit at home trying to make TikToks. I'm like, I don't, guys. I actually do things.
Touring at such a level, though, I mean, it is a bubble, isn't it? Is it not?
Massively.
You know, and because it's a bubble, depending on how long you're in that bubble, there does emerge a kind of sense of this is not real, because normally people don't serve me meals, or I don't have such lovely food in catering. How did you feel about that? Like, you know, I know that's that being on tour motivated you and inspired you, but I'm kind of wondering about that bubble that musicians can be in for a certain amount of time when they're touring, and how valid is that?
It's kind of hard because, like, when you're in it, it's like you just almost become immune to it, and that becomes your daily thing. But what I found hard was coming out of it. I found once the touring stopped, I felt, not that I was lost, but I felt a bit like, God, what am I doing with my day? Like, I'm not getting up to check out of a hotel, to go to sound check, to do this, to do that, to get in a van, to drive 4 hours somewhere else. Like, I felt like the days felt so long because I wasn't so jam-packed with things.
Yeah.
And I was like, why isn't everyone clapping when I come into the room? What's going on here? Ma'am, would you give us a round of applause? It actually, like, I know I say that in jest, but, like, it is something that you get addicted to every night getting up on stage. And, like, bear in mind, I think I had 40 minutes, which is so juicy as a sports thought. I was expecting to get like 20. I was up there and I was like,
40 minutes is almost, it's a full gig for some people.
Yeah, it was so juicy. So, like, you know, you're up there and you are rushed with this high and you're doing it for 24, I think it was, shows. Coming off that for January, I felt so weird. It's almost like I had become accustomed to that way of life.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, can you imagine now if you had to go back on the road the end of January to do blah, blah, blah? Because the boys were going to Asia and they were like, oh, you should come to Asia with us. And I was like, lads, I can't afford that. Which cop on. I can only go across the water. But people were like, would you have went if you could have? I was like, of course I would have. Like, that is, I loved being on the road.
Okay, now that's a very interesting thing what you said about they asking you going to Asia, and you said that you couldn't afford it. Because for some people listening, they might presume that you would be invited and you would be paid to go to Asia and to be put up in nice hotels and all of that. But that's not always the reality, is it?
No, it's not. I suppose it's different for different artists, and, you know, you always have to pay your own crew and you'd always have to put yourself up in hotels and supply your own transport. And yeah, there is somewhere that you go and you just think, you know what, this is going to be great for me, my career, for my learning of the music industry, for me honing my craft. So I'm going to invest in myself. And if you can't invest in yourself, then you're pretty diddly squatted. So that's a decision that I decided to make and I loved it. But Asia wasn't on the cards for me.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I know, or I think I know, is very important to you from a performative point of view is clothes and fashion and the way you dress on stage. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, some performers dress down, you know, Ed Sheeran, for example, T-shirt and jeans, but you don't do that. So where did that approach to the performance, the presentation come from?
I suppose, to be quite honest with you, I just wanted to have fun with it because, you know, a spade is spade here. Like, you know, I'm not going to be in the music industry all my entire life, and I'm most definitely not going to be getting up at 6 years of age wearing a catsuit that I bought in a drag costume shop. Like, I'm not going to. So I was like, have fun with it now while you're doing it. Why not? And I love to, like, dress up, and I love to kind of, like, push the boundaries a bit on what people are expecting me to get up and wear. You know, I can wear clothes like this every day walking down the street, but I can't exactly go down to Lidl's in a leotard with diamantes hanging off it and suspender boots. So why not do it when I get on stage? Like, I'm putting on a show at the end of the day, and people have, like, parted with their hard-earned cash to buy tickets to see me. So I want to sing as best I can. I say dance as best as I can, but I'm sure if you've seen me live, the dancing isn't great, but I'll work on that one. And I want to look as best as I can visually for them. And if I'm, and this is just me personally, and I've no, like, everyone needs to do them in life. And I am a massive believer of that. But I personally wouldn't get up in jeans and a t-shirt because I wouldn't feel like I was performing. I wouldn't feel that amazing aura that I feel when I'm on stage and I feel empowered by my clothes.
Right.
And I just love that. And I have so much fun doing it.
And do you feel empowered by your clothes? I mean, I ask that as a bloke wearing, you know, very mediocre clothes. So does wearing like clothes like that absolutely empower you?
Yeah, massively. Like before my Olympia show, I went in, I'd done my sound check and I was just wearing my normal clothes that I wear every day. And I just stood there with the microphone. I was just like, yeah, yeah, sound check, went through the songs, went through the motions, fine. Went upstairs, got ready, got my hair and makeup done, put on an outfit that I had saved for that show, put on my boots, and I just wanted to run on stage and rule the world, because that's the feeling that my outfit gave me. I felt like a different woman. I felt like I was stepping out of, you know, the sister, daughter, friend role, and I was entering into the pop star role. And I love that. It's such an escapism.
Sure.
And it's such a lovely feeling, because I get to reward myself for all my hard work by going on stage and singing my songs to people who want to be there to see me, who have all the best intentions for me, and you can see it in their faces. And I want to give them as much as I can. And if that's going to be in my clothes as well, then by God, they're getting it.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's actually a very interesting point. And perhaps another one, just to kind of finish off, Lyra, is that, you know, you've been doing this for 7-8 years, mm-hmm. really. You know,
yeah.
you've had the meetings, you've faked it until you've made it, so to speak. And you have gone from a major label, Polydor, to an Irish independent label, mm-hmm. Ruby Works. You've toured with Westlife and been on huge stages. You're touring the UK in April on probably smaller stages.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going back to the O2 yet.
No, okay.
Give me a chance.
Give it time. Give it time. But all of that that you've been through and that you've experienced. So what words of advice would you give to someone like you who is just starting off now with ambitions, dreams, aspirations? What have you learned over the last 7-8 years specifically about the industry and about your part in it and about what you want to do in it? What advice would you give to younger artists starting off?
A massive thing that I would say is no one's ever going to give you anything. Like, no one's going to, you know, make you what you want to be. Like, they can help you, and by God, if you have the right team, they will help you get there. But at the end of the day, if it's your name over the door, it's you who's putting in most of the work, and you have to be able to work for it. You have to be able to make sacrifices for it, because it is an industry where it's not a 9-to-5. It is a 24/7 every day of your life, because you'll miss birthdays, you'll miss christenings, you'll miss funerals. And this is a sacrifice that you have to think, are you willing to make to get to, if you want to, the top end of your game? And I would massively say, as corny as it sounds, make music for you that you are extremely confident in, because the second you start making music for someone else, that will start changing. Because what people want to hear now, they mightn't want to hear in 6 months' time, in a year's time. So you're forever going to have to be evolving yourself to please other people. Start by pleasing yourself in your music, in your career, in what you want, and go for it. You have to go for it. Do not sit back and take the breaks off at any point, except for January's. That's a quiet time in the music industry. So if you want a week off, January's a good time. But other than that, gas on. There are so many people who want this. There are so many amazing, amazing, amazing artists out there that don't get the break. If you want the break, you can take it off. Keep going.
Lyra, thank you so much for talking to me for the Imro podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. That was so much fun.